Hey guys, this is Coach Keita Bussey with 180 Firearms Training. Welcome to the 180 Firearms Training Podcast. We are joined today by Sam Callahan from New Jersey and Mike Hughes. Welcome.
Welcome, Keita. Sam.
How are you guys?
All right, Mike, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, Mike Hughes, veteran cert training pistol and up here in Northwest Washington, and also the new company, Refined Savages, with different products coming out. So it's just it's a pleasure to be here and have this opportunity to discuss various topics.
Why don't you start out by telling us about the cert pistol? I think most people know what it is, but in case someone's watching who doesn't, why don't you go ahead and explain that?
Yeah, sure. Well, essentially it's you know, shot indicating resetting trigger system. And let me just jump into the development of it. I talked about this a little bit before, but essentially just being in a competitive shooting space, like 2009, 2010, what have you, I just needed a tool just to train a higher volume, right? Of draws and awkward shooting position and single hand trigger control and just reloads, all those manipulation skills. And I was always shocked how little that was trained just as a culture in competitive shooting compared to other motor neuron activity sports, right? Like jujitsu or anything, like where they you train. And, you know, and of course, Michael Jordan wasn't built driving to the stadium and, you know, paying 25 cents every shot he put up, right? I mean, right. Michael Jordan was built by going out in his back deal and competing with his brothers and shooting and making training accessible and convenient with feedback. He didn't shoot against a brick wall. Right. You know, so I'm making a short answer long here, but it's kind of important foundation. So I just needed it for myself. And then it had utility, obviously broader than myself. So went from patent attorney to full blown startup to 12 years ago now, believe it or not. And right. And then found different market niches in training and, you know, heavy in like, you know, law enforcement, federal law enforcement and instructors and just concealed carry holders in general.
So I have used your cert pistols in my classes. So before optics were as popular as they are now, I would use your cert pistol to give you feedback on your movement. Basically have the little laser beam, not really pointed at anything in particular, just a white wall. And as you enter your position, it should be moving horizontally and smoothly. And if it's bouncing all over the place, that means you need to get down lower. So I do use it to give people feedback on their movement.
You mean the prep indicator coming into position? Yes. And then breaking? Yeah, that's a higher level of use of it. Because yeah, you can see your body position. And what's right. Funny too on that, I don't want to steal your thunder there, but if it's a closer target, it can be a little more wobbly and still be within, you know, acceptable accuracy zone, combat accuracy, whatever you want. Yep. And if it's further, then you got to like, you're dampening, you have to be a little bit more tuned in, right? A little more patient. Like, I don't want to steal your words. I bet you have better words to say that.
No, you hit a word that I really like to use, acceptable sight picture, acceptable trigger control. And that's a great way to actually demonstrate, hey, look, man, I can get away with this much, we'll call it sloppiness inside of certain zones for an alpha zone. Yeah, we step back to 15 yards, it's a little bit more evident. And then we start playing with entering on a paper target versus a steel target. And I've seen it translated a bunch of times like that. And I really enjoy the actual show and tell of it. There's a lot of people that learn in different ways. I could talk and talk and talk all day long, but somebody needs to be seen that. So that thing has helped me a lot.
And Mike, well, you used the word patience. It does teach visual patience.
Mm-hmm. Well, patience and sometimes a desirable amount of impatience, because when you see the prep coming in, it's like, I want to get that better, right? I want to get that like tighter. And how do you do that? It's not at that point, it's not really trigger control. It's controlling your body, right? So if you're coming in, you'll sit on a 15-yard target or small piece of steel, small A zone or a bob bag, you know, whatever target. I don't like to get all caught up on acceptable accuracy, combat accuracy, is it competition or not? You know, I mean, it's all the same end as far as maximizing the speed and accuracy. But then like I find two points I want to make. One is just that feedback of coming in with a prep trigger where it's contact, you know, because you're prepped, right? I should explain that this is a prep. I'm prepping it. And then I break, I get the green, right? As to show shot indication. This is 6 o'clock, so it's not a sighting aid. All right. And this is a shot indication to show what the muzzle's actually doing at the break. Not just the bullet hole moment of time, but the whole story, right? You know, if there's a trigger mechanic deficiency and such, right? Just for background. But redirecting back to my point, one is getting the feedback. So you have to come in like it's more stable and like breathe out. Like I found with my film, I was breathing out like a big dragon, you know, doing things. That, yeah, it was quite interesting using film for that. And then the second thing is getting the reps. Like if you have to go to the range, and you have all these barriers to entry to train, by nature, just not going to do it. Where if you can do it in literally 2 minutes at home, safe, right? Then we do it because the boom doesn't matter for all the skill sets we're talking about.
Yep.
Right. And we just jumped in, I appreciate that, to a higher level one of running to position, decelerating and shooting, right? That would probably be at least a second class. But I like that because that's where people should strive to. That shouldn't be an advanced skill. That should be a basic. Maybe it's a second or third class skill, but
once you learn to shoot, you have to move to shoot. That is a big belief of mine.
Totally into position and then be poised to get out of position. Right. Yep. And we can train so much, and I don't say I'm frustrated, but I just appreciate any context where, or any opportunity to communicate just the importance of not only doing that, but doing that, being really real with ourselves, you know, not that we're lazy, but we just have to put ourselves in a position to, like I say, lower the barriers to entry. So training can happen like right now. Like this is a little bit exotic having a full dojo and bob bags, but your living room is not, right? And there's plenty of distance and space. And sometimes you can go out a window in your private yard or something like that and shoot a license plate or something, you know, to make a training area and wedge it in a little white space during our day with distributed learning. Like throughout the day, which is more effective than block learning.
Yes.
From, you know, from at least some study. Oh, just, excuse me, screw studies. just your own experience. You know, I think we can extrapolate. I think we can figure that out. You know, that, boy, I got really good by doing these little trainings throughout the day, every day.
Yeah. You mentioned something funnier earlier. You related it to a sport. And I say that to all my police officers and all my SWAT guys all the time. A kid will play with a basketball or a football, or I played lacrosse, but walk around with a stick in his hand constantly, change hands. I'll make 50 reps on a wall, 50 reps on a wall, 100 times a day. And it's a sport. It's a game that doesn't matter about my life. But hey, all of a sudden you make it easy for somebody to get those reps in. And every hour I walk by my pistol in my house, I'm going to take a break during work. I'm going to tick, 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 tick. And it's a red gun that isn't an actual gun you have to bring in anywhere. All of a sudden the barriers of entry are removed and you could sit there and get all these nice reps. You don't have to take your hand off the gun and keep breaking contact. It's a beautiful thing. It really is. I preach exactly what you're saying. It's just couple minutes a day, every day, pick up your gun a few times. How much can you touch your gun? Basically, the guy who's the most efficient with his gun probably touches it more than the next guy. That's it.
Yeah, it needs to be an extension of your body, basically.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yeah. And it can. It's like we talked before coming on here. I'm into moto, you know, enduro now. Yeah. Trying to make a 250-pound beast, an extension is throttle and clutch and everything. You know, I mean, it's to your point on that, I mean, what made me think about it is sometimes I hate to be really tied into words, but a big issue I see with firearms is we think of sport and then the actual defensive use of it. And sometimes we artificially merge those and sometimes we artificially, we merge them where we shouldn't. But sometimes instead of even saying like a sport, it's just a motor neuron activity. And because that, whether it's swordcraft like the samurai, right? Mm-hmm. We're probably the best sports psychologist ever. Like Miyamoto Musashi, and you know what I mean, as far as really training it and really using it and really having competitions that were death duels. Yeah. Okay. I mean, those cats were nuts, you know, in feudal Japan, but it's all, the point being is like, we don't look at firearms enough as a sport or as a motor neuron activity where we get reps, and also just making it fun. It doesn't always have to be a fear-based method. Yeah. Like if you don't do this, you're going to get killed if someone comes to your house. I mean, if it's fear-based, we do this much to kind of meet and then get out of that.
Yeah.
If it's not to sound too cheesy, but if it's love-based, all right, like we like this. Like,
no, you're
this
right.
Good. Then that's like why we go. And to jump on one more topic, if I may, is training scars. The tail of the kite on all that vector I'm going, the drag, is training scars. Okay, what's a training scar? And you get it in BJJ, you get it in, you know, firearms, and you just have to be aware of that, mm-hmm. right? Oh, like, yeah. you know, double taps versus yeah. doing three, triple. You know, there's a host of where training scars can take foothold, but I want to put a firm stake in the ground. The notion of a training scar shouldn't preclude that high volume self-diagnostic training. Like, oh, you shouldn't do
training,
all that.
The training scar. These scars. I love that, like, yeah.
No, that... Yeah. After a number of decades in this, I have a high level of confidence. That argument just doesn't hold up anymore. I've seen too many shooters who are so into just defensive that with really poor skills that are not accessible under any form of, I don't even call it stress. I'll just say any form of time, operating in a time window that. Yeah, high volume self-diagnostic training, the convenience factor, I think it just clearly wins out. We're yeah. seeing that too at some federal, I think I can say it, like Border Patrol is amazing. Trainers in Harper's Ferry, those cats are so dialed in to taking their training to another arena of proficiency. It's great to see.
Yeah, I like that you said for the love, because that's a big reason why I like to use the competition side of things is take away the defensive, take away the what if side of things. Yeah. And let's just play the game of high volume reps and subconscious skill sets. Yeah. And then let's plug that in. Like you said, training scars do exist. We acknowledge that. Anybody who's trained high volume, I know you've got your dojo there. I'm shot plenty. I have a black belt in Taekwondo. I know what high reps are. But with high reps comes the knowledge of, okay, I acknowledge this training scar. Now let's train around that training scar. Here's a drill to get rid of that training scar. And guess what? Subconscious skill set, avoidance of this, you learn more and more and more. And then all of a sudden when you're asked to do any kind of skill, I have a subconscious skill set for that. That's my big thing is I train with a lot of SWAT and LEO. And my thing I tell them all the time is you could tactics your way into a corner. You'll tactics your way right into a coffin. I don't care if you don't have the subconscious skill set to match those cool ideas and things and angles and all that stuff you're talking about. Doesn't matter if you can't right away hit the thing you're looking at, then we got a problem. And right away, I like to lean towards dry fire. I lean towards pistols like yours. I love the reps. That's it.
That's brilliant. Yeah. No, that's well put, Sam. Yeah. Agree.
So I think 2 weeks ago we were using yours in an active shooter situation. So it literally, it's one of the better tools out there for repetition like this.
Well, that's if I can just wedge in one for topic change. Yeah. That's huge actually. That's huge. To do an active shooter situation, let me just put one more thought here. Because so much, I think so often, and I'm not an expert in the active shooter and the reality-based training, RBT and all that stuff, but I do and have seen how if it's done with marking cartridges with a lot of protective gear and you do it once, and they usually set it up wrong where they just kind of fail and it's just unpleasant for law enforcement with an officer just doing in-service training. It's just like, oh, that sucks, you know, and it doesn't, nothing about that was fun. It's exposure. It's not training. Okay. That's my point. There's a difference between exposure and training. Exposure is a few reps, you know, success or failure, but not enough to really, you know, get at it. And then there's training where you do a ton of reps. And I'll give one story and well, I don't know if I say this. Well, it's, I think it's, but you know, at the FBI, all right, the grapplers, those like, That leadership in there is awesome because I went back there with my family once and there was 50 like pairs and they all had certs. Okay. And they would do some drill. They would this kind of an escape and they're BJJ guys. They're FTU physical training, PTU, sorry, a physical training unit, PTU. And they would do some boom, boom. They would shoot. They would get live reps about 20 seconds and they'd have a protocol to reholster, you know, so that's not a training scar. And they do it again. It was beautiful. It was awesome. It was like a dream. I share it with you. And I haven't shared this publicly because I'm always concerned about saying, you know, name dropping. But my point on that is that it's like complete fruition of the idea, right? Because it's like, it has huge utility. It's at probably the most highly respected, law enforcement agency. And they're getting like awesome training. They're integrating it with open hand. Yep. They're having the concepts of you know, high volume self-diagnostic training. They're using live targets like these guys. Yep. You know, so, you know, like right here is a good shot, right there is not, you know, like as far as 3D on another human, they're doing it safely. It's just, I don't know.
Again, it's wonderful. I love blue knives and red guns. That's been my thing lately, being able to use both because that's what's coming. Like you said, the letter agencies, all the guys I'm not allowed to talk about training with, those guys have loved this stuff. And then the greatest thing is after they grapple and break or whatever, you could then step back and explain to them with that gun, look at this angle, look at that. I do it all the time with clearing where showing somebody, hey, this is when the muzzle should break around. Watch my eyes. You stand in this room and you could safely get reps like that. So these guys are getting actual, like you said, not exposure, application, and then able to use that stuff going forward. So it's cool. It's a big deal in my mind to, and I mean, not for nothing, I'm a Glock guy, but the fact that your stuff fits in all the duty gear, that's a big deal too. So it's been a nice couple of years with your gear.
Yeah. Super. It's a great visual to show you with the laser, you can clear this much of the room without even entering.
Bingo.
Yeah. 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 On our new model too, Keita, I should note this, you can actually turn the red laser on constantly. So I'll demo. This is our 115. This is the full size. Mm-hmm. And there, I'll show you this little tech. So I just pulled out the tool. Okay. And I turn on the prep laters are already on. You can turn it on and off. Most of your training's with the prep off in case some viewers aren't aware of that. So you just have shot indication or you have prep and shot. Okay. But right on the top here, I don't know if y'all know this, but you can turn this. It's kind of like adjusting an old school carburetor, okay? With an internal mechanism to touch. Now it's on full time. See what I'm saying?
I love that. So I have a drill in my book, Smart Move, using your cert pistol. And I tell them, because you have to pull the trigger to turn on the light with the old style. So I tell them, this is just a check. You know, you don't want to practice holding that trigger down.
Yeah.
But you need that to activate the light so you can see how you're entering. So don't do this for practice. Do this as a check to see, am I entering the position smoothly? So now that you have that, they're not, you know, practicing holding down a trigger while they're moving, which is not a good thing to practice. So that's awesome. You added that.
Totally. Well, yeah, I want to be ahead of the curve on that. That's a great point, kid. And of course, if you have the time to communicate that and it doesn't get taken out of context, like, oh, look at Gita, she has her finger on the trigger coming out. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
like
exactly.
You know, that kind of. Yeah. So this is just a simple way to keep it on, and then of course still have shot indication and it's constant. And another. While we're on topic, slight small bunny trail. Watch this. So I can get again the tool that fits in the handle, right? So it's conveniently there. I'm gonna back it off. And this is working well with the camera here. Oh, so it's just off, okay? Like it's just hovering above the internal carburetor-like mechanism. Watch this. So I'll get it all in here. I have to go up in this side. So if I come just, I even think about pulling that trigger. You know what I mean? I just think about getting that finger on the trigger, it's going to let you know. I won't put my hand on there but if I just kind of not muzzle myself to... But even think of am I missing there? So anyways, what's nice about this is, let's say you just do a drill like in here and all of a sudden you go, okay. And you turn the lights off, right? And you have a switch, turn the lights off. You see if someone does this, there's safety and you can see it really quick. So you have a mild noxious stimuli, turning off the lights. And you see if the reaction is this, because if our first certs we sold, I won't mention, the entity, they bought five first ones, like way back when 2010 were to prevent that because someone got shot. A 16-year-old kid got shot in a bad shoot in the law enforcement agency and the training when I wanted a tool. So the first ones were on safety, not performance, like we're talking about. So anyways, that's just another tidbit.
So let's go back and talk about basically where you came from with your shooting. Like, how did you learn? I know at that time we didn't have YouTube. It was all everyone was pretty much self-taught. So tell us about where you came from with your shooting and how you got your skill to where it is.
It's a good question. It's a good question too, because it kind of gets back to like, why do we like some things, right? Like as much as some people dislike the noxious stimuli of noise and boom and recoil and, it's probably as much as someone dislikes that, as much as is probably equivalent to how much I like that, for whatever reason. Right. Yeah. I think like, why is that? Right. I mean, I think there's a few things. If I could I played football and did engineering, University of Idaho. And that was good, hard formative years, really rigorous years. Like I never missed practice. I started final 3 years. Everything was good in that chapter, but really tough. Then again, the real world of patent, I got misled in life after that. I went to law school. Right. And was a patent attorney for a good spell, and I was just really discontent. So I got into competitive shooting. I thought, oh, okay, this is cool. Like, I like this, you know, golf. No, it's a waste of land, you know, like anything else, like racquetball and that, you know, I mean, fill in the blank, but shooting was like, I like that. I happen to live rural. So I got a training facility on that and naturally, and then that's cool. And then I really got into it. And then I went full bore. You know what helped me out at the time? I got Matt Burkett videos and I took a class with him. That was expensive. And Matt was very influential because he just drove to go faster, mm-hmm. you know, with some technique, but really drove go faster. So he was a very effective instructor, you know, very, very influential. He really was. And I owe him a debt of gratitude, you know, to that. And then going from like, you know, trying to do limited and then going back to production. I like production, you know, I like the simplicity. I like doing mag changes. I like, because my belief, it's the Indian, not the arrows. And I hated how technology was trying to mask deficiencies in my mind. So I thought production, perfect. You know, production, I like this, you know, the gun will run it. I don't have to fiddle too much. And then from there, I thought, okay, I got up to seventh in the nation. Yeah. And you know, I had GM pretty quick and set overall, whatever it was, I forget, you know, honestly, because then all of a sudden I got burned out. I was like, you know, I don't really care. Like I just watched, I was so busy starting this thing, this entity raising a full blown startup. Like I had to raise a ton of money to go to manufacturing, like a ton, right? And you have to, so there was 5 years of 7 years, seven hard years and 3 years of abject hell with no revenue, like going from being a patent attorney to nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Like I had to sell a cert in Chicago, Ilita, to get luggage on the way home. There's 9 months of like that bad. So
flying by the seat of your pants.
Oh, it's nothing. You have no more liquidity. You have no more debt, you know, to draw from. You're, you know, and you're about to lose everything, you know? So I'm digressing from the shooting to the, you know, to the life, but that is part of the life. So that they're pretty much intertwined. So yeah. So now I have no passion to shoot competitively, but I still am addicted to training. Like I still like to do it, but I don't have a pull like a match and what have you. I'd much rather go do enduro riding, you know, right now and continue. You know what I do like doing, Keita? If you want to cut me off, just cut me off.
Oh, you're good.
I like to train the trainer aspect on it now. And like when we saw each other, wonderful mm-hmm. at, you know, Juliana and the gang's, you know, Wonderful Girl on a Gun mm-hmm. conference. There was 48 instructors over 2 days. Four-hour mm-hmm. sessions, and they were amazing instructors, you know, mm-hmm. in a trainer development course. It was the best course I've ever done for a train-to-trainer, you know? It was, and I love that. That fuels me, right? I mean, that was like,
okay. It's rewarding.
Oh, yeah, like, okay, this is starting, well, it's starting to merge more things. Like, there's pistol craft, of course, but then there's, you know, there's the power mint, and then there's just the real notion of firearms, which I always wedge in there. It's to defend against an autocratic government, you know, entities mm-hmm. power. It's not self-defense, not hunting, you know, it's, and it's some best practices. And I think it puts people on a glide path of that mission I'm on for high volume self-diagnostic training. You know, I mean, that's, you know, the search, the tool for it, and the search keeps the lights on and it's my revenue stream. But at the core of it's something, I think with everything that's, I'd say good is something a little deeper. And it's just that whole notion of high volume self-diagnostic training. So I touched on a few bunny trails along that way, but that's how I've got the shooting and sort of where I'm at now.
Sam and I have both taken the leap that you've taken. It mm-hmm. is a leap of faith, and you don't know if you're going to fall on your face, or if you do, you're just going to get up and find something else to do. But yeah, we both took that leap, which brings me to another funny thing. When I started my business and I came up with 180 Firearms Training as the name, I was going to call it Next Level Firearms Training. And I was like, oh, wait, this is already taken. Who has it? And then I found it was you. And I was like, oh, my goodness, Mike named his business this. I guess I can't use that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was totally looking at that name for my business.
Yeah. My previous life is a intellectual property attorney. That's under the trademark law, which is a whole nother thing to go to, the likelihood of confusion between our services. And there might have been a little likelihood of confusion, but I don't think you would tarnish that mark, and I would not tarnish it either. So we can have a symbiotic relationship of sharing it. But here we are in this timeline. We did. Yeah.
I like, okay, go on with something else. I'm going to leave that alone.
Yeah.
So Mike and I actually, I don't know if you know this, Sam, but Mike and I met at Nationals in 2012, I think it was.
Yeah, that was the last time I shot. Now, the time I think I got seventh that year. And then after that, I was, this took over. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually got to see you shoot at Nationals, which is pretty cool. So can you tell us more about basically patenting your idea and getting your cert pistol mass produced and distributed? Like, how did that whole process go?
That's a good question. Okay. That's a long one, but I'll hit the high points without losing the necessary texture and details. That's possible in this, whatever time window you want to allocate for this subject. But essentially, like, it's incredibly tough. And I like looking at Elon Musk, because I look at him and I could work super hard and be 10 times more, you know, successful, however you want to put that, with revenue or whatever, but I would still be 1/1000th of his effectiveness. You know what I mean? That's a scalability of, like, of startups and going to scale and hitting every human with services. Right. I mean, my point is, when you get to entrepreneurism, it's so funny, because, like, it can go so far, and then it really gets you thinking, like, it's like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. What is good, Phaedrius? Like, what do we value? Like, what do we really want to be out of this? What do we want to get out of it? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I'm not digressing. This is very fundamental to entrepreneurship, is like, what do we want? Like, how much time with the kids? And it's important. I'll wedge this in.
The balance.
Your value system. Totally. Because I think the reason I say is, some people go in, I've done some startup clinics and helped out. And even, like, if it's like, you know, do you want to be your own boss? And there's some motivations in there. I think, ooh, they're a little perverted or not accurate when people look at it going into it. And I think it's important to think, like, look, if you got the capabilities, the go power and the, I'll say, intelligence and ability to, you know, socialize and pull in money, and maybe bootstrap it if you got those resources. If you have those skills, sometimes you're better off just working for a company and being happy. And, you know, you got to go into it with the right reasons. And you can't tear down the people that have been great. Like, I will never tear down Elon Musk. Like, it's like, oh, does he have time with his family? Does he have a lot? You know what I mean? Like no. I respect his passion of running those business. I get it. Like, he has so many big chess pieces to move. I bet his days are fascinating, but I don't think a lot of people want to be him. You know, too. So, you know, so going into it, is this psychologically, like, do you really, really want to, and for the right reasons? I can't stress that enough, even though I invested some time here saying that. But if you do and take the risk, it's kind of like jumping into a cloud and hoping there's a vine. It's not like changing jobs where you're grabbing a vine and, like, okay, it's good, let's go forward. You know, it's jumping off a cliff into a cloud, hoping there's a vine.
Yes.
And you can't let that fall. You can't let that fall kill you, and it can spiritually, like, it, your health can deteriorate, you know, the stress, mm-hmm. feeling of failure. It's, you know, it can be pretty freaking gnarly. And, but some of the mechanics, like, beyond that, is just, you know, you got to do a Series A round, and you have to find investors, angel investors. Right. And you got to figure out your pre-money valuation, and then figure out how much you need to be cash flow positive. And then whatever you figure out with, called pro formas, that's a spreadsheet of how much it takes to get it going. Whatever you calculate with high degree of granularity of, you know, every expense and time and all that, double it, right? As a factor of ignorance, factor of safety, you know, because it's going to take double what you calculate. I think that's a rule of thumb, and then figure that, because you don't want to do a second round and all that. It sucks, you know. And if you hang your shingle out and you can bootstrap it, is one thing. But if you go to that next level, that arena where you have to raise hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, really, then you've got to get investors. You got to get a board of directors. Okay, mm-hmm. You got to have enough seed money to kind of get that together, and you got to put everything you own into it. It's going to take everything you got. So you got to be prepared to declare bankruptcy. You know, seriously. And take mm-hmm. that risk. And you may not. I mean, you have family and other obligations. And it's not a failure to not do it. I think, you know, caution's a better part of valor. Like, for most people, don't freaking do it. You know, quite frankly, I hate it when people say, like, oh, you just gotta jump and do it. It's like some sort of swear, but surgical use of profanity. Some prick runs across the minefield and makes it. he's a 2% that made it. And he's calling people on the other side, like, hey, come across, it's great and everything. It's like, no, you know, the only reason you're successful is you hit the timing and you hit the marketing. Like, you're not special to be an entrepreneur. Like, you, there's some grit, you know, there's some things, but there's a lot of people that didn't, that got blown up to pieces that mm-hmm. were highly capable humans. Mm-hmm. And they should not
have the best intentions in the world, but yeah, unless everything lines up and you have the grit to make it through. Yeah, man.
You need the grit, yeah. You know, and I think some of those that hit the tech industry, they don't have the grit. They really landed in a stream which carried them, and their views are very distorted, mm-hmm. you know, as to that. And their sense of self-importance is highly inflated. Where the real chain of causality was strong current, you know, that mm-hmm. like,
yeah. I think mostly entrepreneurs that have made it are really truly on the other side, missing an arm or a leg. Those are the entrepreneurs. Yeah.
Well, I don't think everyone is cut out to work for themselves either. I mean, I've worked as a nurse in a hospital. I've mm-hmm. had bosses. I've worked my entire life, and now I have my own business. And I have to say, I am the meanest boss I have ever had in my life. Like, oh, you want the 4th of July off? Nope. You're going to work.
Yep.
I am. No holidays for you. You're going to wake up at 5 a.m., yep. hit it hard. Like, I am the meanest boss I've ever had. And not everybody is self-driven in that way. And they flourish under a boss, being employed yep. by someone else, being told, okay, this is what you need to do. This is your deadline. You have to do that all to yourself. Mm-hmm. And not everybody is cut from that cloth.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a technique to that, but it's probably a little bit of trait and a little bit of techniques to trick yourself into that kind of discipline. I think it helps to have a little bit of fearlessness, a little bit of intellectual spaciousness to jump in arena. Cause like, say, you don't know anything about video, didn't know anything about that 12 years ago. Right. Mm-hmm. But you got to learn it and figure out and build on it. And at some point feel like 80% is good enough. Send it. You know, get going. And my wife, for example, would be a poor entrepreneur. She's, you know, I met her in law school. She's very highly capable, but she'll crush one walnut with a 50-ton press. Okay. And it's going to get crushed and perfect. And then, you know, she's an attorney, right? So she just wants to mm-hmm. do that. Where I was more reckless, like I'll do mm-hmm. 10 and I'll miss 4 and I'll get 6, you know, so I'm paying 60%, but I got 6 in 5.4 seconds. You know what I mean? So like, I look at that and I don't look at the 4 on the table, like, well, whatever, and go on.
Got a good hit factor.
Yeah, it was a good hit factor. Exactly. Exactly. A hit factor is metaphorical for life. Like, how much production and efficient, you know, can you do in what unit of time, you know? And so there's a, I think there's a trait thing. And I think to your point too, Kita, like some people need to, like, it's nice to show up and just kind of follow a lead, you know. Like a friend of mine, a mentor mm-hmm. of mine, the company was being sold, you know, to, you know, large entity, and it was brutal. For the due diligence was brutal for 6 months, and he's just like, man, I can't tell you how many days I just wanted to show up and someone tell me to dig a ditch for 50 yards.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, like you know, I dig this ditch and bust my tail and I get an attaboy, you know, at mm-hmm. the end. Yep. Like, I would crave yep. for that kind of.
Yeah, because you get to shut your brain off and go home. You're not thinking about how to give yourself more work the next day.
That's 24/7 and yeah. all that. And it's tough. I mean, in fact, I'll tell you, just to be honest, you know, Britt, my business partner on this, we kind of got not bored with NLT, but we're doing things. We don't want to overkick our coverage and go into dumb places. We test it here and there. And of course, I have a lot of other failures, which you never seen the light of day on. But we thought, well, let's just start Refined Savages. Let's just do a new company, you know, new identity, new branding. This is probably a shameless plug, but let's put a fire starter kit, you know, this gun's clear. I already checked it. You know, it put a fire starter kit into our Glocks, oh, cool. That little, you know, that spot right here. We call it the G spot because it's that spot mm-hmm. in the Glock, you know? And so it's a fire starter kit, like, and it's cool and it works.
That's
right?
Awesome.
There's a grill rod. There's like little two packs. You got these cotton balls that are compressed in there.
Oh, yeah.
And a striker, it works. You know, this is a shameless plug. I'm a horrible but, and we also did the torch, you know, because we just got sick of weapon mounted light and, you know, screwing up. So we just put a mag light. So you're, you know, it's angled upwards. So you have a proper orientation, you know, it's always there. You carry this in your backup mag. So you have two of them, you know what I mean? Like, light up and stuff. But anyways, we thought, okay, let's do this. So the last 18 months, we've been working our butts off. I shouldn't say working our butts off. We're working smarter than harder. mm-hmm. on just a whole new product, whole new branding, you know, whole new different like things. So,
yeah. Stuff made by Shooters is a good thing. That's always my thing. I've seen too many Walmart products. I like Shooters making products.
Well, and this one, and I already posted this on my Facebook page to get reactions, and some reactions are like, oh, that's stupid. Why would you do that if you dropped the mag? And I get it. I like that kind of scrutiny because, you know, we reject these ideas, right? And then we come back to them, and then we come back, then we make a prototype, and then we kind of keep that going until we thought, oh, wait a minute. This, it's not just a product. It's a product and the training and vetting it out, right? So we thought, oh, wait a minute. Like, I hate searching a room like this, right? Even like this, you know? Yeah. And some, you know, and I hate, you know, we have a light which illuminates where we're searching, which I always thought was stupid, and it's narrow. So you have this like narrow view. So we just, and everyone copies that. And then it's kind of like more cowbell, what I would do, like more lumens, you know, like the engineers and companies, like, how do you make the light better? We know more cowbell, you know, just like the Christopher Walken skit, which is silly too, right? Because then you get diminishing returns and you get negative effects of a thousand, mm-hmm. you know, too much in a narrow spot. So we figure let's widen this out. Like let's widen it out. So you can see, you know, from a super wide area, let's point it down. So the muzzle's up and you're in this compressed high rate. I used to not like this, like, but I like this now better. Right. You know, and that's a debate. I get it. And then if you present out, it still illuminates, right?
Yeah, you're going to have plenty of splash.
Yeah. Yeah. You got, yeah. And it's in the center splash is right here. So an untrained person can, I'm going off on a tangent here. I was uninvited, but
it's definitely interesting though. It's a product that
is
answering a question of what. Yeah. I like that. I like that's a very creative
and solve. Holster, right? Like, so I can holster it in my holster. Give you that shot, but yeah. So anyways, but it's fun. Like it's fun. Like, okay, let's take everything we learned and do a whole new entity and get it going and whole new set of videos and training on that and everything. So we're excited. So that keeps it fresh.
I think successful entrepreneurs are always looking for what's next, what's next, what's next, what can mm-hmm. we do now? And I think a lot of people who want to be entrepreneurs find that they have a failure to launch. Like you said about your wife, she wants everything to be perfect. Well, I can't do this until I've done this, and I can't do this until I've done that. It's kind of like when I'm cleaning my house, I have to start with the dishes and then do this. Like I have to do it in a certain order because I'm totally OCD. I can't vacuum the floor first because then if I'm wiping off the counters, I'm going to throw stuff on the floor.
Yeah, right.
So people are like that with their businesses that they want to start. And well, I can't do this yet because I have to do that first. And they just never start.
Yeah, you don't get to be like
just
that.
Just start. Mm-hmm. Start doing something. Yes, it might fail, but... Thomas Edison said every failure he had trying to invent the light bulb was actually a learning experience teaching him how not to make one so he could make one. So mm-hmm. every failure is actually a success, and just take the leap, just do it.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I agree. And if someone's a perfectionist, it's not insurmountable. You know, it's just the stars align. Like, I know I'm pulling my wife in this conversation, it's probably gonna kill me, but I mean, she could certainly, you know, do that in an entrepreneurial space, but she has to, the big thing here is it's like kind of recognize yourself, recognize your idiosyncrasies, recognize, you know, where those strengths can be a weakness. That's a big one. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest one. Or it's just speaking philosophically, everyone has to understand like this strength can be a weakness if misapplied, you know, and that's so, so important to know thyself and in that realm. But I don't know, the biggest thing too is entrepreneurship, like it's not, I don't know. I just kind of come in full circle on this. It's not that big of a deal, I guess, you know, like it can feel your spirit and it can do all that. And it can give you a lot of freedom and give you more chess pieces to push around. And as you get capital, you can be more of a capitalist. Like over time, I'd like to have capital and, you know, invest in things and be hands on and have board seats and say, listen, I've been here. Not exactly like this. This is a diesel engine and I've kind of been a propane engine, you know, meaning metaphorically for, you know, there's differences of what you're doing and what I know, because I can't be a projectionist. People do that all the time too, right? No, I did it this way. Like no.
Right.
But there's similarities. You have combustion. You have, you know, there's similarities to give advice. And I wish me was do a time loop in 2010, right? To explain things. And I think being a capitalist and going forward would be cool as a next chapter, you know, to drop in like a chunk, you know, enough money to where you're an angel investor and, but also have not really a hand on the throttle, but maybe a map.
Right.
The driver who's running the throttle, you know, running, mm-hmm. you can't micromanage, but.
Yeah. Some landmarks.
But, yeah, some landmarks. And like, look, and I hear some low ground. Let's keep this between the shores here, buddy. All right. So, yeah, but I don't think entrepreneurship, I think we look at it like it's so good. And I just kind of caution people, it's okay to be where you're at working for the man and waiting for that pension and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it's cool. Mm-hmm. Like you can get a lot of hobbies, a lot of living, a lot of relationships. I just don't see enough. I don't see enough counterbalance position and not even from successful entrepreneurs where it's like, hey, just, you know, don't, the grass ain't always greener on the other side. The grass is greener under your feet when you make it greener, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not lined up for the majority of people to do entrepreneurship. Yeah. So.
Well, since we all three have our shirts, not to change the subject, but I think it's kind of cool that all three of us have our own shirts. And I think we should talk about that. So if you go to gofastdontsuck.net under team stores, 180 firearms training, you can find this shirt that says, I flip and catch. And you can pick the side that's right next to the RO standing by you, so he knows. And on the other side, it's got my logo that was actually me running in the Philippines at a match. So that's my logo on the other sleeve, and it comes in men's and women's. The women's is the V-neck, men's is a regular t-shirt. And Sam, I just bought one for you, and hopefully I'll have nice. That before See I come this weekend. Weekend.
Yeah, hell yeah. Awesome.
All right, tell us about yours, Sam.
I've got a bunch of stuff, so basically my wife's a graphic designer as well. So I like to hand her some catchy little sayings in the shooting world that aren't so grabby in the supermarket. I don't want people to think of gun stuff. So I've got my speed of sight shirt right here. That's a Akita saying right there. The sooner, not faster. Steve Anderson gave me a whole weekend of crafts, if that's his phrase, but playfully, of course. But and then I've got my Callahan training group, just my logo on the back, tanks on. My playful thing is I stopped wanting to wear clothing that wasn't promoting me, keto, or like people that I know. So I made my own and just out of necessity started selling it as well. It's just that entrepreneur thing, you know, just I can't just buy one and do it. I kind of gotta do it for everybody, capitalize, give it to a couple of my buddies, get that vibe out there. But on callahantraininggroup.com, I have a store that's got that. I got some stickers out there and stuff like that.
Awesome.
Nice. Great. All right,
what you got, Mike?
Cool. Yeah, we're lacking in that on swag. Like we got to be a little bit more swag savvy. So yeah, we have, of course, nextleveltraining.com. I got it on the wall back there. And Refined Savages, that's just launching right now. Refined Savages. We're going to get some swag on there. I don't think we have the t-shirts up yet. I got to talk with Luke, our marketing manager, get an update here in like five, as soon as we're finished up on this. And I hear you all. It's, I think it's fun just to have swag. And I like what you say too, like put something out there that's, you know, I don't think we shy away from what's gun friendly or whatever, but I don't know. I think I like what you said right there, Sam, that sometimes, you know, you put it out there, like some the sooner, faster and things like that. It's, yeah.
There's enough sheepdog this pew, pew that I'm like, I'm trying to do something that kind of,
yeah. And it's fine. You know, like,
yeah, yeah.
All that stuff, it just,
but I'm not that's my big joke, because I'm a competitive shooter as far as everybody thinks about, so I don't need to have some tattered American flag and like the helmet and boots on my, I'm a competitive shooter, man. So it's good for me to have gun stuff that's fun for everybody. And I mean, all this kind of stuff applies to life, if we're all talking about entrepreneurship and we're talking about the same stuff. So it's all applicable.
All this stuff relates to life,
same stuff,
shooting, yeah. I mean, it's something we can do in, you know, yeah, we can do it later in life. We can, yeah. We can like always pursue it. We can like look at the Miklicks, like the, you know, Jerry's, yeah. Very inspirational to me, just how he, yeah. performs at a very high level still,
yeah. Yeah.
With more laps, racking up more laps around the sun. So yeah, all this shooting and training, it definitely, I think it does integrate just into a real positive, healthy, mm-hmm. good, independent feeling, mindset, you know, highly, yeah. functional human lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us more about this new branch of your business. What do you do exactly?
With Refined Savages?
Yes.
New entity? Well, essentially we, you know, I'd say Britt and myself and members of the team, we had the idea of like what do we you know, let's put a fire starter. To me, a fire is like really critical. And the whole name Refined Savages came out, and a good friend of ours, Gary Drake, was, you know, around the table and kind of thinking on some of this on a very conceptual level, you know, just a friendship level. And we just like the word refine because I love playing the cello. I love like just totally submerging in particularly everything philosophical nowadays, like not to mention Jordan Peterson videos, right? Just ferociously consuming this information like that, right? And like in deep physics videos of Schrodinger's cat and superposition and the mean, I mean, all this stuff. It's just like, it's so cool to have an upper neocortex and really use it, right? And really keep stimulated. And YouTube, and you know, people complain about technology, but it's an amazing resource if we harness it positively, right? And get a good Instagram feed of a lot of positive stuff, you know?
So it's kind of like being a Renaissance man.
Refine. Yeah, I guess in Renaissance men, they'd have resources back then, but I think it's opened up to a lot of us. You know, Beethoven had to work his dad as a, you know, maybe not the greatest character, but he had to work his butt off to get a piano, right? Nowadays, anyone can get $100 keyboard, but we don't get a lot of Beethovens and Mozarts. That doesn't align with people's passions. It's fine. But point being, the barriers to entry have lowered in so many arenas, right? Mm-hmm. So I think being refined is huge. And I think it fights depression and addiction and a lot of issues that can overtake humans, right? Mm-hmm. Not to mention a belief system of some form, you know. But then savage is the other yin and yang on that. Like,
yeah,
like we are freaking, you know, cuss if it would, a surgical profanity, but we are savages. Like, mm-hmm. And embrace it, you know, embrace what we are as humans. Like, don't suppress it or color, you know, sugarcoat it or anything like that. Like, note that we have, you know, a good defense mechanism and we're can be just everything. Yeah. You know, I think everything about that. So that's just sort of a conceptual look at it, but kind of one thought on that, and I guess how that merges, it was that fire. Like, I think the humans that survived had a natural attraction to fire going back maybe even before 180,000 years. You know, I don't know exactly where that started, where we kind of branched and formed, you know, as Homo sapiens or Cro-Magnon, whatever, you know, whatever's in our genes. Neanderthals, I think I got in me, right? But anyways, we're attracted to fire, and I think it's important, you know. And I don't think like we have fake fireplace. I think there's something almost spiritual to fire that goes. It's hardwired into us just because our ancestors that survived like fire, the ones that didn't like fire didn't really utilize it, and they perished, right? And so I think we're hardwired, and it's so practical. And I love survival stuff, not in the fear based, but kind of more of an opportunity based. I like, and then survival is becoming more mainstream, which I think is good. Cause I think it just breeds more independence. And I think these millennials who have had more protective parents. And I just watched a Jordan Peterson on this slight bunny trail where it's not so much parents were bad. It's just that instead of having six kids, they've had one. And it's this. So I think there's some reasons, you know, why we have, you know, millennials are less robust, I would say. And they got to accept that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they've got to accept that. You know, every generation has its issue and they got a lot of support, but hey man, let's go to survival skills. And I'm taking a long route here, touching some dendrites here to get to my point. So we thought, hey, let's make a real fire starter kit that you will carry. And it's synergistic with what we should do anyway. So if we always carry our pistol, and in case someone jumped in, I already checked this, but then if we have this, you know, that fits in here, then you always carry it with you. So you're always going to carry your Glock, and you're always going to carry, you know, to fill out your fire starter kit, right? We like that theme to that, right? These little compact cotton tenders, they can expand out, and you got a really cool little petroleum jelly packs. That's a trick to make those, to make them that small. And then a really cool, using cool a lot here, little striker in here. This thing's so cool. I'm so proud of this product.
I just always carry lipstick, you know, in case I have to start a fire.
Lipstick?
Yeah. The petroleum and lipstick, you can use that to easily start a fire.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's good to know. Well, but the thing is to have the ferro rod and a striker, like always with you. Okay. Always with you. So proper protocol. You
lock this back. It's funny because I carry a knife that always has a ferro rod on my knife that I can always use. Yeah. This is Amtac Global Northman.
But I like that.
That's been, I don't go anywhere without that, but people think I'm funny. That I'm, no, it's I like the ability to have the opportunity to start fire if necessary. I don't know why you wouldn't have it. It's in my, it's with me. It's so
cool. Oh, that's great, Dan. Yeah. I totally, I never thought of, that's cool. I didn't know about that product. Glad you shared that. But you can have this as well. I mean, I'm not trying to sell you.
Well, no, I like that. I got guns on me too, man. Two is
yeah,
one,
that's
one
super
is
cool.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you
I've
know, having
an unused like, slot in all my Glocks. All I have is a plug in it right now so I can reload faster. So you're telling me I can do that as well? That,
Sam's like, yeah. Yes, yeah. I'm in.
I have five Glocks that are hungry.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, shoot me a deal. I'll get you, obviously, a really good deal, you know. But, that's yeah, great. Exactly. Just use that space, you know, just use that little space right there to something.
I like to be self-sufficient, utilitarian kind of person. And that speaks my language right there. That's very cool. I like that whole thought process of the refined savages is a great way to put it. It's what's the saying? I'd rather be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in war. Right. That's the thought. Like, I always like that. I always like that thought process.
Yeah, no, indeed. Exactly. Exactly. That's part of that. And then of course, the other part too, is we've always been so frustrated with illumination for diminished light and just super frustrated and getting new holsters and having solutions and going single hand and just, you know, just really thinking about it. Like, God, these are all crappy, like workarounds, you know, and then taking rifle craft lights that put them on pistols with the narrow beam, like there was a loss of translation in there, utility and use and initial use, right? From what I can deduce from the evolution of weapon, you know, pistol weapon mounted light. So again, not to reiterate too much, but just figure, God, let's just think differently. Can holster, can put here, like I say, we can have our second magazine for a second one. So, you know, people come and say like, well, I have 10 magazines, I have to get a light in every magazine. And you don't want to be snarky, but you know, people talk sometimes or ask questions before they think in a little bit and it's like, well, yeah, but you don't carry 10 magazines. Right. You carry maybe two, you know, so hopefully if you need three or four, then you should probably carry a rifle if you feel you need that, you know, that much. But we're excited.
I always issue this right now. If you carry an extra magazine, and you don't have a tourniquet on you, you're wrong. I'll throw that right now. I can anger whoever I want with that one.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah. 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 The ankle holster, I got that from concealedcarry.com. That'll link ankle horse and med kit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I like that. The ability to, I have a light now. I always have a pocket light, but have a light on my gun is a great thing to extra to have. You're freeing up space to carry other things, other tools. I like that.
So is the light on the base plate?
Yeah.
Or is that?
Yeah.
So is it removable?
Yeah. You remove the base plate and you just put this on. So it's a base plate light. It's so simple. It's just so simple. And then there's two screws in here. We're making one final change of putting these deeper brass inserts. So it's actually not up yet. This is kind of a pre-release because we made a few final changes because we did some really rigorous testing. I'm not supposed to do this because I don't want people to like test it too much. Like, you ever buy a G-Shock watch when you're a kid and you're smashing it, you know? G-Shock watch and it can do that, you know? But I mean, like, yeah, we got like, you can't see, but this is on concrete here, but you know, try to do super rigorous testing on that for super tough.
So is there a battery then inside the base pad?
Yeah, essentially what we do here is you take off, I'll show you this one, you take off this front plate, which I already did on this one, and then you pull out this little unit.
Oh, cool.
And then within here, and this is, we designed this. We are, in fact, we have a really good relationship with our vendor. And then from here, you can take out and get out a good old CR2 battery. So it just comes out, you know. Nice. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. So you get about a good hour. You can even take that out and use it just as a flashlight, you know, if you were in a situation where you would have to.
Well, yes, exactly. Yeah, or you know, it works really well. And again, this is kind of making pistol craft and concealed carry kind of work for you in a bigger picture. Like, you have a extra magazine. I like to carry it right here in the front pocket. All right. So I'll show you right here. So I stick it in, and I did one little trick here. I put in a safety pin right here. So it just kind of sits nice and high and tight. It's very innocuous, right? You can't tell what it is, you know. But as an extra magazine, one, it's super fast for reloads. it's kind of like Neil Rogers' snag mag, you know, that concept. And then you can just have a little light, you know, it's useful. Like I say, like you need it for something and you got it on you. And this is why it's important and people have to be real with themselves. I find myself carrying an extra magazine or being psychologically induced to carry an extra magazine because I got a light and it's handy. You know, and I guess if purists would say, oh, you should save it and you shouldn't use it. You should be dedicated for just shooting. And it's like, nah, we got to live. You know, I got to undo the lock in my container. I take this out and I, you know, it's useful. I got two lights on me all the time and it doesn't preclude carrying another one. And it's a great way to carry front pocket.
Yeah, you're speaking my language, man.
It's the best way to carry front pocket I've found. Yeah. So now my buddy Britt, he has a different view on this. And I think people can look at the product and take what they want. My deal is one on the pistol and then one on the pistol and then one on the in my front pocket.
Definitely a cool
product.
That
is super cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm gonna like the cert comes out, like I can just tell, you know, people are gonna have like initial reactions. Like,
oh yeah, everybody will freak out. The internet.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I gotta navigate and I kind of welcome it. I think that's a lawyer in me, you know, like I like to engage in like that discussion because people just, yeah, it's funny. They're like, well, we search with our muzzle pointed. And I go, well, why don't you search? If you don't have a light, why don't you search with your muzzle pointed? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like muzzle pointed at area. Like 99% of what we search, right, in diminished light is not something we're willing to shoot. So why would we point our muzzle at? I mean, why are we breaking a rule? Like, it's just a fundamental question. And if we're forced to, I get it. Sometimes you're forced to, but if we're not forced to via technology, then is there a better way to go about this to handle diminished light situations? So, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it spawns some good questions and good discussion. I'm looking forward to that.
I mean, it is funny. It answers such a funny safety question because if your light has to be at a certain angle to work and you're forced to work in a high ready position, people are going to all of a sudden have a little bit better muzzle awareness. It's one of those, like, it is very interesting. I've never thought, like, I don't know. I've never didn't have the idea. You had the good idea.
Yeah, if that's your SOP is that you have to search like this, then that's a great solution.
Yeah. The compressed high ready, and you can do temple index too. Like if you're controlling, like particularly in the EP world, when they're controlling someone, I get temple index, you know, not just running around with, you know, the spot for that, but a wide throw gives you that flexibility.
Yeah, that's cool. You know?
And if someone tests with that, man, like it is so different to have a wide throw just that's not like this. Cause when you're like this, you feel like in a water with sharks, you ever in the water with like turtles or something like that, like, huge, I don't know, you feel so you know what I mean, like when it's 360, it's just that sense of insecurities. We need to use our senses to the limit we can, right? So
interesting.
So if somebody thought of a product they wanted to produce, what steps would you recommend?
Okay, this is switching hats to my former self. Guess it's not legal advice and I'm not anyone's attorney here, but as a patent attorney, retired patent attorney, I'd say the first thing is file a provisional patent. All right. And most patent attorneys won't say this, but I will, like, just file it yourself. All right. Give a full description on the best mode of making that deal. Don't worry about claims and the numbered paragraphs that really define the scope of invention and all that. Just write out what the heck it is. Write different, we call embodiments, different versions. You know, and put in the text, like we need an actuator. It could be pneumatic. It could be electromagnetic. It could be a little midget with a can crank, you know, extending it out, like it, whatever, you know, like, you know, be, you know, throw that space on there and just file a provisional. And you can do it online. There's a lot of resources. It's $150. I forget the filing fees now, $170. It's, you know, it's sub $200, you know, and you have a year to bust your and try to get some traction with it. And I shouldn't say year. You have 9 months, okay? You have 9 months because it takes about 3 months to prepare a proper full application. And you'll have to drop about, you know, 10 grand to a patent attorney to get a full application patent. You know, that's just filing it. And you got to prosecute it. So you got money, okay? It takes resources. And you got to raise that money. You can bootstrap it, but you got to raise it. The first The first route people generally go is it's not the double F, it's called the triple F round, friends, family, and fools, because most of the stuff is so high risk, right?
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. I say this jokingly, a company gets to a space, they give dividends. And my sister kind of, and my, her husband, they're awesome, they invest in me. So say, hey, the triple F round worked out for you here. Okay. but it's friends, family, and fools. Like it, that is high risk. It's personal relationships. Whoever's giving, investing that money is giving one that money, because most things just are going to fall flat. But you have a provisional patent to pursue it aggressively. Try to secure financing. Maybe get a securities attorney. I should say maybe get a securities attorney to try to aggressively, raise money and figure, kind of like Shark Tank. But Shark Tank doesn't explain pre-money valuation and how much equity give up really well. I can do that if you like. And a lot of people know what that means. But that's my suggestion. That would be my suggestion. But those 9 months, you got to work, you got to run. And don't, God, I hate this. Like so many clients when I was a patent attorney, that's what spawned me into doing it, right? Because I see so many clients and I figure, I'm kind of orders of magnitude smarter, more capable than these people. Like I'm going to do, not to be an arrogant prick, but I'm just saying at some point you're I got to jump in this space, right? Mm-hmm. Into entrepreneurship, the Series A round and everything. But it's most people try to be secretive and they file their stupid provisional and run, get it out there. You got to share it. You got to talk to some vendors. You got to get some manufacturing. You got to you got to talk to some people that there's this neurosis of they're going to steal my idea. It's that is so debilitating, mm-hmm. You got patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets. So at least with a patent, utility application, not a design patent. Those are very narrow for some non-functional aspects of a design. I'm talking a utility patent, a provisional utility patent. Get the hell out there and get traction on it.
So does that basically prevent someone from stealing your idea and producing it while you are working on producing it?
No.
It
gives you a filing date. So you file a provisional and you're only protected for what you disclose. All right. So sometimes you can file a second provisional. That's not a bad idea. You get further ideas, just tack on some more notes, some more drawings, figures. Put numbers to it, like the main chassis 22 has an actuator 24. You kind of write it in patentese. Just fake it till you make it. Get the disclosure down. Don't worry how pretty it is. But you're protected for what you disclose, and you're enforced. It's like a shield at that point. At least you're shielded, for what you have filed. If you follow through with filing the full application, then you follow through with prosecution, and you follow through with getting allowable claims, and you follow through with paying the issue fee, which is another $1,000 at the end of all that, then you got a sword. Then you can go out and stop people from make, using, or selling your idea, okay? And you prevent others from make, using, or selling. Your device can still infringe another patent, which is a whole nother thing, but so you got to do issue on that. Yeah, if you invent a chair like this and someone else has a patent on a stool with three legs, to make a chair, you got to make a stool. So you don't have the right to make your idea. You got to do a right to use, but you have a right to preclude others from making, using, or selling your content within the continental United States. And of course, that includes importing with some of the new rules and stuff they have there.
Okay, that's interesting. So what is the biggest tip if you could go back and talk to your former self, what is the most important thing you would go back and tell yourself?
Yeah, there's a plethora of small things that are just very detailed, which wouldn't be helpful if I follow the paradigm I talked before about being like a board member to give advice. So that's a kind of a funny question, because I had the advantage of looking at other people as a patent attorney, mm-hmm. and sort of doing, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to really fall in love with my business like it's my child. I'm not going to have cert tattooed on my arm, because it's not my identity. And of course, that helps with investors because they want a liquidation strategy at some point. Possibly some do. I mean, ours is quite different from that. But, you got to have an exit strategy, mm-hmm. how this ultimately, or you make dividends and, they got to be taken care of, your shareholders, right? And we are blessed beyond belief having amazing shareholders, the most amazing humans on the planet. You know, I'm not kidding you, our shareholders. It's really fantastic. But I think my point is don't fall too in love with your entity, your whatever, you know. And I think too is like people get too locked in, like they just get so like locked in some line of thought, they just gotta pull back. And whatever it takes to pull the focus back, is because it's too easy to, yeah. And I think the criticism part too, like I just see too many people, and I hate this. I'll give advice sometimes and I see like, well, you know, usually a marketing budget works for some, but I don't think that works for me. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, how can you not have a marketing budget? Like something, like even if it's on a napkin and it's a budget, because you can spend money on you can spend $1 trillion on marketing. So how do you narrow it down to $100? Is that Facebook ads? Is that an ad in, you know, USCCA magazine or, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think listening to other people, you know, and hearing the feedback, you know, not what you want to hear, is so critical. And I think humans, the cognitive dissonance, they don't do that, right? So that's yeah. Advice, I think, in general is, you know, have conviction in what you got. Like I'll have conviction in the light, you know, like, okay, I thought this out, but I'll also listen, you know, to what mm-hmm. people have to say.
And I think you're talking about what's called Mitori Geiko in I think it's Japanese stick fighting or something like that. They talk about Mitori Geiko. It's where you learn from other people's mistakes. So we do this in shooting too. So you can have huge growth without actually even doing anything, just by watching mm-hmm. others' mistakes and making a decision for yourself. Okay, if that happens, I'm going to do this, or I'm just not going to ever do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, indeed. I mean, I absolutely. I mean, like that's where I know. And it's a funny thing on that too. Like there's a deeper element to that. Schadenfreude, the German word, where humans take pleasure in the fault and discomfort of others. we can't take pleasure. Like, let's say you're really competing against someone.
Of course, us Germans would come up with that.
I know, right?
I'm German, so I can say that.
Right. But it's good to like seek out and see others' mistakes, but mm-hmm. somehow have a sense of empathy, like, it sucks for them. And it's hard, like saying a match you compete and if someone screws up a stage, like, yes, I got this one in the bag now, I'm going to be a champion. You know, it's hard to like suppress that. But yeah, it's hard to it's hard to like really watch mistakes, like try to scope them out, try not to take pleasure in them. You know what I mean? Or a sense of superiority. You've got to be honest with that. I think there's a deep human trait to that. And yet really learn the root cause of that and try to mm-hmm. stay clear, you know? Indeed.
Yeah. Grant, who is normally on this show, he's off traveling the US right now, so he can't join us, but he had only been shooting for 1 year before he won the national championship in his country. And it was because he not only learned what to do, but also learned from the mistakes of others mm-hmm. just by watching what mm-hmm. not to do. And I think sometimes that can be even more important than learning what to do.
Yeah. You know what helps on that too? Sometimes watch a video and like almost block everything out. Like, what's their lead leg doing? Like, I'm doing that right now, believe it or not, with just hard left, but related in hard enduro racing. You know, like Jar Jarvis or whoever does that hill climb, like where's his body? Like, how did he get there? Did he drop in the pegs and come through? You know what I mean? And sometimes we get so caught in like watching the same thing, because as far as composition theory, we have eye lines, you know, left third, and even I'm doing this subconsciously trying to have some composition here. And so if you block that out, you can learn a lot visually by taking away. Just a quick little mm-hmm. tidbit. I think it's kind of useful.
We never even talked about your fitness stuff. Like, don't you have videos out and things like that?
I did some in that space. You know, there's a lot of, you know, space out there. My biggest thing on working out with the cert is kind of interesting, but the thing is, I guess I got pride. Like, I'm so worried about being at like a Taobao or cheesy, you know, like the problem is with fitness is everything makes this thing the whole thing. And like, a thing is just a thing. It's a component, right? An element, right? Like yoga isn't all like, oh, you know, I got a posterior issue. Oh, you got to do yoga. Like, oh, my cardio, I need to get, oh, you got to do yoga. Like, no, that's not a fix all, man. Mm-hmm. And my point on that is like with fitness, like I still to this day do some stock things in my home gym. You know, it's a home gym, so I can do it. So I got all these barriers to entry for a lot of people if they're in a public gym. But I love doing planks where I shoot stuff on the wall at high, you know. I love doing kettlebell cleans, mm-hmm. and shooting a target, basically single hand shooting, mm-hmm. stuff. But I think what I want to reiterate or strongly emphasize is that's just a small part of a workout, right?
Right.
I still got dedicated cardio. I still got power cleans, you know, good old, I'm a huge believer in good old power cleans and you know, just symmetric sagittal plane work, let alone that, you know, the non-sagittal plane type stuff, which is more in vogue. But I think people get so caught up in fitness on making the small thing the whole thing. It really bastardizes the message. And I just want to reiterate, like, there's some things you can do with a cert and a workout that are very synergistic. Like, mm-hmm. I can demo one thing if there's one thing, if you want me to. You want me to?
Yeah, do it.
Okay. I'll demo one thing. Okay. So this is like, first off, let's take a step back. Like, we have to do things that are sustainable, right? Like, it can't be cheesy. Like, it's below barrier to entry. We have to get results, and it has to make sense over the long haul, and it have the motivational factor. Mm-hmm. And usually a 1 + 1 = 3, if we do two things at once and they work together without compromising each other, then that's good, right? And we think, oh, that was a good use of time, and we'll continue that behavior. So let's work on trigger control, all right? Let's work on trigger control, and let's work on core strength, like just with planks. I hate planks. They suck. You're sitting there, you're static, and you're bored, and you know, but it's quite good, right? And I also hate just strict sagittal plane stuff, right? You got to break sagittal plane, particularly as our thoracics get more stiff and what have you, and you want to use all these obliques. But we can't, but not to get too wide here, but we can't just be sagittal plane. Like, I see people do all this twisty stuff and they're not strong. It's like, listen, you got to get your, you know, under the squat bar and shoot your spine out your ass. You know what I mean? Like, go four wheels. And so there's that balance there. But okay, here's one thing. So this is fun. I like this. All right. So instead of just doing a plank, like, there's enough character on the ceiling, I won't do it, but there's stuff going on up there, right? That just function as targets. Can you hear me from here? You hear a good,
yes,
sound?
Yep.
So if you just do like just a simple, but you kind of come up and I go 1, 2, and ooh, got to stretch for 3. And I got a miss on that last one. And I come back, I go 1, it's a weekend now, right? 2 and 3, okay? And I usually like to do 7 and 7 on each side. As you get tired, you lose a little bit, like, all through there. And your sights have to be really good, because this is not point shooting. And your trigger control has to be spot on, because I'll just demo, like, you're going to see, you know, nice dots, right? See the dot there?
Mm-hmm.
The dot? It's going to do these dashing, like, oh, the camera's not picking it up. It's too slow frame rate. But you're going to see these dashes.
Yep.
Very annoying. And while you're focused on trying to get a dot, because everyone understands dot, not dashes, right? Everyone understands, mm-hmm. a swish is better than a bounce, 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 than going in, right? In basketball, dots are cool. Dashes are for dorks. And don't strive for that. And as you're striving for that, you forget about the discomfort and boredom of,
yeah,
the plane.
Yep.
And you're breaking sagittal plane, you know, in a good way. Keep your belly button sucked in. Try to get thoracic twists. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I'm going into maybe greater detail than necessary, and I hope I didn't lose any of
you. No, I love it.
But that is a good supplement to tack on to, mm-hmm. any workout regimen you do. If you're doing some core strength blocks, some non-sagittal plane, again, sagittal plane is just front plane. And if we do everything sagittal plane, we're very stiff and blocky. You got to break that, you know, like.
I think that might be good for learning how to do faster transitions. I don't know about the rest of everybody listening.
Yeah, well, I think any kind of twisty, yeah. I mean, it gives you some mobility, some strength in that space. So that is one little movement, workout, whatever you want to call it, exercise, which has absolutely held up the test of time for like 7-8 years for me. That's been,
and it's so much more engaging, mentally engaging.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, you forget about the boredom of the plank, and it's yeah. I mean, that's a bigger picture. Like, I think it's why I love enduro. Not to totally digress here, but enduro racing so much because my heart rate is through the roof. Mm. You know, it is, and the workouts are becoming phenomenal. And but it's totally just this mission of doing a stupid loop, you know, and then an incredibly hard obstacles. But yeah, there's something to do that.
No, I'm with you. It's the full engagement. A downhill mountain bike, it's that same feeling. It's
downhill, it'll be totally. Yeah.
Full engagement the whole time. It's you can't get bored like that. So yeah, planks are boring. Dry fire, people tell me is boring. I like dry fire. So people tell me it's boring, but yeah, throw two things together and all of a sudden, yeah, you can get a lot more productivity out of one thing rather than being like, oh, I don't like this. I hear that so much. It's like eating your vegetables, but hey, gotta get it done.
Yeah.
And Sam, why don't you tell us about any companies you'd like to promote and of course your own company?
Obviously, yes. Callahan Training Group, Sam Callahan. You can find me basically all over the Northeast, primarily in the Poconos training. But I work with Vortex Optics. My range is Double Eagle Poconos. I have a local rifle company I shoot for, Modern Material. They're the only manufacturer of AR-15s in New Jersey. Lose Firearms is my local shop. And then I work with Targets USA. I know you know Jason up in Alaska there. Yeah. And then Dry Fire Mag, ironically. I do a lot of this training without a laser, but now it sounds like I need to get myself a couple more cert pistols around here.
All right, Mike, what do you got as far as companies you'd like to give a shout out to or just your company?
Well, it's just kind of me. NLT and, you know, Next Level Training, CERT and now Refined Savages. I've got a lot of relationships with, you know, a ton of entities, but once I start that lane, boy, I'm going to miss out on like a lot of friends in the industry and such. Right. So
where can they find you? I see it on the wall there.
Yeah. Nextleveltraining.com or certpistol.com or Refined Savages, the new entity.com. That one, should be live here pretty quick. We're just second quarter of 2022. So
thank you so much for coming on. It's been very informative. I love everything you've got going on, all of your inventions and making it happen, and the advice you've given to people who are maybe thinking about doing something, I think is totally invaluable.
If they think about it, but I want to end this, like, if you didn't do something, don't worry about it too much. Like, you know, figure out what really moves you. Like I started this off as shooting, like, okay, shooting, I like this. So I'm going to try to do this. And a wise person, a friend of mine in Rotary once said, sometimes things worth doing are worth doing mediocre. Meaning, say mountain biking, I suck at mountain biking. I'm never, you know, I did some drug-free bodybuilding. I sucked at it. I always got last place, you know, but I liked it, you know, like it doesn't have to be like something you really excel at. Right. And I don't know. I've been some of the motivational get out there and do it stuff. I like it, but I always think, God, it's missing a component. You know, it's missing a component of reality. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'm making sense or not.
No, I know what you mean. My big thing is do what you like to do, but make positive change. You can't just do it with your head up against the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. Your vector's going here, but it's so like comparison's a theft of joy sometimes. Right. So, you know, you can compare yourself to Elon Musk all we want, but no one is going to touch him within a hundredfold, you know, within that metric of say, entrepreneurship, but yet you can be super, not even content is the wrong word, unless you're content with your trajectory, your vector, your derivative. Mm-hmm. But no, it's good stuff, Keita.
Yeah, thank you so much. All right, we will see you guys next time.
See you soon.
Yeah, cheers.